Okay. No questions before we get started? I did send a mail saying next class I won't be here, but the topic would be continued with a lecture by Sang-Woo Kyun on reinforcement learning. I'll set up why it's connected to everything that we're doing. Reinforcement learning turns out to be quite cleanly connected to essentially Markov decision processes. You know, it's the issue of learning the model and planning with it together. Whereas we've been looking at Markov decision processes when the model has been given to us. Okay. Anyway, so he's going to talk about the reinforcement learning on next class, which is Tuesday. Then I'll come back and continue efficient algorithms when model is given. I will be doing some of it today, and I'll do some more on Wednesday. And also, when I do that, actually, I'll go closer to probabilistic planning competition, which international planning competition, where the what the current state of the art is in terms of which of the many algorithms we discussed seem to be working well. Okay, so that's the basic idea. So okay, we're still looking at fully observable Markov decision processes, right? And here is like sort of getting you a bearings. So we looked at the general model. It has no initial state. There is no information. All that's given is normally the general MDP is given by giving the transition model, the reward model. That's it. Okay. And given that, then you essentially are trying to find the optimal policy. Okay. And the policy should, optimal policy should tell you, irrespective of whichever state you are in, what's the action to do. Okay. Normally planning, so the notion of initial state and goal state, what happened to them? There is no initial state at all, because it you can be in any state. It's not that the agent is starting from one of the states. At least that's not given to you as part of the specification. Okay. So you can think of it as not given to you, or you can also think of it as you're not restricting, the MDP does not restrict you to think about a specific state from which the agent is starting. It is essentially saying, irrespective of where you start from, it doesn't really matter. Once you start doing actions anyway, you can find yourself, because of the stochasticity, you might find yourself going to different states anyway. And so what I really need to do to you, tell you, is when you find yourself in a particular state, what you should do. Okay, that's the basic model. And then there is no goals in the general MDP model. Instead, you have the notion of rewards. Okay, and you actually, in general, if you pass through the state multiple times, you collect rewards every time you pass through it. So if you do not want to collect more than one reward from a state, then you need to ensure that once you get the reward, you die. Okay. So the normal notion of goals in classical planning, for example, is just to reach the state where the goal is true, and stop. Okay. So if I give you, if my initial state is I and goal state is G, and I give you a plan P, which actually goes through the goal state but ends in a state where goals are not true, then you would consider it to be a non-plan. Okay, you have to, so for example, doing A1, A2, A3 is the correct plan. Then you do A4, then you are no longer in the goal state. So if I tell you A1, A2, A3, A4 is the plan, it's not a plan. You have to remove the A4 and then make sure that you stop at the state where all the goals are true. Okay. So that's a special case, and if you want to do that in the context of reward functions, the way you have to do it essentially is to make certain goals, certain states be absorbing. That means once you get to that state, you can't get out. okay? And that would be a change to the transition function. To make something absorbing, you need to tell the transition function. The transition function basically has to say that if you are in that state, you can't get out. Okay, there is no transition out of it. Okay, and also, as I said, it's the entire, the model was at the explicit state level. It's not factored at all, so there is no question of actions being specified in terms of state variables or any such thing. Okay. Now the standard in, and then we considered a finite, infinite, and indefinite horizons. Okay. Finite is actually easier to solve because it's just a series of equations. You know, for the last stage, if you know what, if you're in the last stage, you know what to do, and if you are the stage before that, you can then use the Bellman equation to compute what the optimal things to do, and so on. Okay. And in the case of infinite horizon, the version that we considered is, in the case of infinite horizon, if there are rewards, if you can keep accruing rewards, right, then you can become infinite. The total reward accrued by any policy would be infinite, and so you can't differentiate between policies. So the version that we looked at here is discounted reward model, where you consider you know, discounting the future rewards with respect to current time. Okay, but some people, I mean, in some cases, that's not a reasonable thing to do. It's not actually the case that people would agree that the reward, you know, t steps away from here is gamma power t of the reward now. Okay. In those cases, in fact, there is also this notion of average reward models, where if you have infinite horizon MDPs, you can also try to compute optimal policies and values such that they have the highest average reward, the optimal average reward. Okay, so per stage, what is the maximum average reward you are able to get? Okay, but those are normally harder models, and we won't even discuss them. Okay, and then the standard algorithms for both finite and infinite, and then the indefinite horizon, you assume that everything hopefully will end up in a absorbing state. We will actually look at a version of an MDP where that will be the case. Okay, and you know, the policies where every trajectory, every behavior sequence with probability one will end up in a absorbing state, those are called proper policies. Okay, and so then you are trying to find the optimal proper policy. Okay, and in those cases, you can also consider indefinite horizon, where you don't quite know what the horizon is, but you know it's finite. So none of the sequences will be infinitely long, and so there is no notion of worries about infinities. Okay, we'll see actually that a version of MDP which is quite close to path planning. And in fact, if you think of deterministic planning as finding paths in a state space, right? Then you can think of stochastic shortest path algorithms, and that's a version of MDP which actually winds up having indefinite horizon model. Okay, and then we also looked at the standard algorithms, which are value and policy iteration, and they both have to look at the entire state space. That's one thing. Okay, so they essentially compute the optimal policy for the entire state space, and their operations are going to be done at each state. Okay, so it's polynomial. The good thing is for fully observable Markov iteration processes, they're both polynomial in the size of the state space. Okay, so having done that, this is basically a short summary of what we did last time. And there are two things. One is, of course, the model of MDP itself. So what we will do much of today and the next couple of classes is specialize the MDP model such that it is relevant to, you know, specific types of reward models that you might find in planning. Okay, and see for those cases what would be the best solutions. Now, value and policy iteration will always work. Okay, the question is whether you can do better, whether you can do, you know, more efficient algorithms. Okay, so that's, we'll get that in a minute. But you can also talk about, is this model already general enough? I mean, it has complex reward functions. It has, you know, the stochastic transitions. Okay, it turns out you can also generalize the model of fully observable MDPs in multiple different directions, and each of those would take us more time to talk about. One thing that I hopefully will do is partially observable Markov addition processes, where the agent does not know the state it is in. It only knows the belief state. Okay. Now, the only problem, of course, is belief states are, remember, in the non-deterministic planning, belief states were sets of states. Okay, so there are, so if there are, you know, n states, then 2 power n sets of states. Okay, the problem, of course, is now that you're talking about stochastic uncertainty, it's not non-determinism. So you could have two sets, S1, S2, S3. In one case, the distribution, the probability distribution on S1, S2, S3 is 0.1, 0.1, 0.8. In another case, it's 0.5, 0.4, 0.1. And those are two different belief states now. Okay. So in fact, what happens essentially is in the case of PalmDPs, PalmDPs are fully observable. I mean, PalmDPs can be thought of as fully observable Markov decision processes, except when the states are belief states instead of normal states, which makes sense, right? Just as non-deterministic planning was nothing but finding paths in the space of states, except now the states are belief states, not the normal states. Okay. The only problem is when you went from in the non-deterministic to in the classical to non-deterministic case, when you went from states to belief states, it was still a discrete set of states. Belief states were also finite number. Normal states were n, you know, belief states were 2 power n. Here you essentially have infinite number of belief states. Okay. And so things become reasonably ugly, and it is fully observable in that space. And writing value and policy iteration algorithms when the states underlying are continuous becomes reasonably, you know, interesting. That we'll spend some time figuring that out. Okay. So that's partially observable Markov addition processes. And you can and of course, partially observable Markov addition processes already have continuous states because belief states are continuous now. Okay. But you can also talk about Markov addition processes, fully observable Markov addition processes that are continuous to begin with. Okay. So what these are is that even if the underlying MDP was discrete, the moment you have uncertainty about partial observability, you get continuous state space. Okay. But you can also have continuous state space. One of the state variables is a continuous quantity. So that there will be interesting issue of. So what happens is all the summations in the MDP, the Bellman updates, etc., become integral. We won't talk about it, thankfully. Then you can talk about MDPs and especially PalmDPs when there are multiple agents. Okay. Already you can think of MDP as a sort of a game against nature. Okay, you try to do an action and the nature and the action can take you to S1, S2, or S3. Nature basically picks which one will actually happen. Except it's a benevolent opponent. Nature has told you that with 0.3 probability I will pick S1, 0.5 probability I'll pick S2, and 0.2 probability I'll pick S3. Okay. Now you can actually start saying, you know, instead of thinking of an amorphous agent like nature, you can actually think of other agent, you know. Now the interesting thing is the nature's model, you know, as long as we don't expect that nature is out to get us, you know, basically you don't have to model the nature's mind other than in these probabilistic outcomes. If I have an agent I'm playing with, okay, then they have minds too, and I essentially need to model their mind. Okay, and all sorts of fun things can happen. I mean, they could, for example, set up a long sting operation where they keep basically letting me have a certain outcome for certain action for 3, 4, 5 days, and then after I get used to that, then they change. You understand what I'm saying? So it's like it becomes a game. Okay, so the game theory essentially we talked about in 471, we looked at min-max trees in terms of essentially MDP, I mean RTDP, real-time dynamic programming, being changed into min and max layer you might remember, we'll talk about it again today. But in general, there is this whole area called decentralized multi-agent partially observable Markovization processes. Okay, and Markovization processes are already exponential in state variable input, and also so polynomial in the state space. The moment you go to PALM DP, it becomes exponential and undecidable, and as you added anything else, it's becoming worse and worse. Okay, but there are models like that. And then finally, one other thing that I should talk about is, which we may say, we will say something about this, and we might say something about this, which is, what if you have actions with durations? Okay, so the interesting thing is, so you have a Markovization process where actions are instantaneous right now. What if actions have duration? So then you have then you have to start talking about concurrency. You consider start doing, you do multiple actions in conjunction, and they're taking different durations. Okay, and that is the whole area of semi-Markovization processes. Okay, we might do a little of it, but probably not too much. So those are the models. If you start from this general model, and if you start adding other agents and uncertainty and duration, other agents and partial observability and duration, those are the kinds of models you'll get. Okay. Now, the thing that we'll spend more time in the next couple of classes, at any rate, is how to solve the fully observable case more efficiently. Okay. And then there are like two things we'll actually try to do. So today, and in fact, you can say starting today till next Thursday, you can say that all we are doing is trying to come up with more efficient algorithms. Okay, and it turns out that there is this topic called reinforcement learning, which has a curious connection to efficient algorithms for MDPs. The idea is, in reinforcement learning, you are not given the model. Okay, what is the model for MDP? The transition model and the reward model and the cost model. So cost of the actions, the rewards of reaching certain states, okay, and of course the transition model. These are given to you upfront as part of the specification of MDP. Okay, in reinforcement learning, you assume it's not given. Okay, if it's not given, then what you do is, you are essentially trying to act in the world, okay, and see the kinds of rewards you get in the world, and see the kinds of states you are transitioning to in the world, and then you are slowly building the transition model, the reward model, the cost model in your head. And as you build the model, then next time around you can actually avoid getting into bad situations, because now you have a model of, if I do this action, what would happen? Okay, so reinforcement learning in the fully observable case, I mean, so in the partially observable case, reinforcement learning is what kids are trying to do. You know, they have a bunch of actions. They don't quite know what is the point of doing those actions. So they do various actions. I mean, that's what, when kids, you know, try to put blocks in multiple different ways and trying to figure out what they're doing. Most of the time, what they, you can think of that activity as, you're trying out the actions, seeing the states you get into, and experience the reward those states give you. Okay? And so, for example, you know, you got into a state where you put your nice hand on top of a red star, then you would experience the reward, in this case the very negative reward, and then you will hopefully realize beforehand, before doing the action next time around, that this action has a pretty bad, you know, effect. Okay, now so the reinforcement learning, of course, learning the model is of no use if you don't use the model to improve your performance. So a kid who figures out conceptually that, you know, putting hands nicely on a stove is not good, but keeps doing it anyway, is not going to get too far at any rate. Okay. So the assumption is that as you live, you are extending your model, okay, and with respect to the current model, you try to plan. So when I say model in MDPs, I just mean transition model, reward model, cost model. So reward and cost, I'll just say reward model, and then transition model. Okay, all of these you have to learn by doing. Learn by doing. Okay, that's what basically the reinforcement learning idea is. Now, the reason reinforcement learning is a very complex problem is oftentimes you don't get any reward for doing just one action. Most of the states you get into are neither good nor bad. Okay, so you have to do like a sequence of actions to get to a point which will have some reward. So the kid, you know, gets up, not much of a reward, walks around a little bit, not much yet of a reward, turns the corner, not much of a reward yet, and then sees a little fishy. There is maybe some reward in the sense, you know, we are wired to feel happy for various things. Okay? So now the question that kid is trying to answer is which actions should be given the, which stage should be given the credit for the reward I experienced here. Do you understand what I'm saying? In particular, the kid might have done all sorts of other irrelevant actions, and yet, finally, when he came to this state, when he or she came to this state, they experienced a reward, and you have this credit blame assignment problem. You know, which states should get part of that reward you experienced? And this, you know, next week when Sangwook talks about reinforcement learning, and if you read Russell's chapter, it completely uses the same exact MDP model, and it tries to talk about how the model parameters are computed from variety of, you know, from experiences in the world. Okay? Yes, and then I'll come. Yeah.
There's a separation between planning and execution.
Yes.
It's going to execute around the state and find all the.
Yes. Yeah. So the issue, of course, is at the end of the day, at some point of time, either during the day or at the end of the day, this kid hopefully has changed her model of the world. If not, see, the thing that I tell people is for a kid or an adult without a model, everything is surprise. So you wake up, you're extremely surprised. Have you seen this 50 First Dates, the movie? Right? Everything is a surprise, right? They have no model. So the model is gone. Every night, this lady sleeps and wakes up in the morning, she's empty slate again. So everything is surprise, and you have to learn everything again. Okay? The point, of course, is as long as after you experience the reward, you also do this analysis and try to give credit and blame assignment to the states, and you're also figuring out which actions tend to go to which states. Now the interesting thing is during a specific execution episode, every action goes to a specific state. Okay, but suppose this kid, you know, tossed a coin, it came heads, and then the head had a happy face, and the kid felt very good about it. So now at this point, the transition model is if you toss a coin, you get to feel happy. But then next time around the kid tosses a coin, he gets tails. He's not so happy anymore. So now he did learn something, which is that this action has multiple outcomes. And if it's a biased coin, he can also figure out what is the probability of getting heads and what's the probability of getting tails. Okay, that's reinforcement learning. Okay, so reinforcement learning normally is a harder problem. MDPs, you give the model. In reinforcement learning, you're trying to get the model and use it. So one nice thing about learning it is planning and learning are all intertwined. Nobody ever tells you, here is your model. You learn it and you use it. Okay? That's one way of looking at it. However, in fact, it turns out that even if you actually do have the entire model specified, you as a computer program has the entire model specified, sometimes your computational resources are not enough to run the value and policy iteration algorithm. So what you would do is you would simulate the model. You would simulate the model in your head. Instead of doing the execution in the world, you actually simulate the model in the head using the probabilities. Okay? And when you so as far as most reinforcement learning algorithms, they don't differentiate between whether you executed a sequence or whether you simulated a sequence of behavior. So because of which, in fact, you can solve MDPs whose models are already given using reinforcement learning algorithms. And when you do that, the analogy is when you're given the Bayes nets. Remember the Bayes nets? Right? When you're given a Bayes net, you can compute the exact distribution of any query. You have all the information, so I can, given the Bayes net, I say, what's the probability that this variable will be true given that this evidence has been observed? You can compute the exact number for it. Okay? If you don't have the Bayes net, you can find out what's the probability that if you have these things true in the world, this particular query will be true. So for example, what's the probability that when people have yellow toes, they are suffering from anthrax poisoning? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Okay? So if they have yellow toes and curly ears and some other couple of bad evidence, then you're trying to figure out what's the probability that they're suffering from anthrax. Okay, two cases. Case one, I have an entire model of what causes what in terms of a Bayes network. I can compute the exact probability using variable elimination or any of those techniques. Case two, I have no model. Okay, I just have the world. Okay, so I go around looking for people who have the evidence true and who have the yellow toes and the curly ears, and then check whether or not they have anthrax, either, before they die or after they die. Okay? And you get the numbers. And you take the frequencies. You can take the frequency ratios. Those are the probabilities. If you take large enough number of samples, you would get the exact probability. Right? Now, I'm talking about a third model, which in fact all of you from who know Bayes networks know, which is simulate the Bayes network using rejection sampling or using Markov chain Monte Carlo or any of these sampling algorithms. What are you doing there? You are actually taking the Bayes net, but you are tossing coins to simulate the future. And the reason you do it is because exact computation is too costly. Okay, but simulation gives samples and then you take the numerator by denominator. If you actually execute in the world, you also have samples and you can take numerator and denominator. Of course, simulation is infinitely cheaper than actually executing. Cheaper in terms of other issues such as actually doing the work, right? So reinforcement learning, when you have models, so the technique that you learn about reinforcement learning could also be used for solving a Markov addition process when you actually already have the full model. So instead of talking about acting in the world, you talk about and let the world decide what actually happens when you toss the coin. You simulate your actions because you know the probabilities. So using a nice little random number generator, you actually, if the action can give three states, S1, S2, S3, with 0.4, 0.5, and 0.1 probabilities. So you toss a three-sided coin, which comes, one with 0.4, one with 0.5, and one with 0.1. Basically, and then you figure out what is the actual outcome that happened randomly. Okay? So that's the interesting thing about reinforcement learning when you wind up hearing about it, because it's also reducing the work you do. So you're trying to avoid exact computation even though you have the model. Okay, you do have to realize that having the model is still infinitely better than not having the model. Okay, because if you not have the model, then you have to go into the world and execute, or you have to go into the world in the case of Bayes nets and actually sample people. Okay. And so today, I would then look at some other efficient algorithms for Markov addition processes, mostly which are in terms of special cases of MDPs, fully observable MDPs that make sense. Okay. Okay. This unfortunately went away, but I don't think it's all that important because this is, I think he used some sort of a font. But So, you know, in an MDP, you're given some set of states, a set of actions, and you have a transition model, okay? So if you do an action A in state S, what's the probability that you would get to, state S dash, okay? And then you also have a cost model, you also have, which is what's the cost of doing an action. I'm sorry, in fact, you can, in general, you can also have a both cost model and a reward model, okay? Which is both about doing an action A in state S to get to S dash. What's the cost and what's the reward, okay? And then you could have a set of states which are terminating states. That means the transition function, in essence, doesn't let you get out of them, okay? And then you can have, depending on whether you have a finite horizon or infinite horizon, I mean, infinite horizon or indefinite horizon, you would wind up having a discount factor. And then you may also have a start state, which is a special case. We'll talk about in a minute. But this is just some of the things that you need to specify in MDP. A couple more terminology that will be useful today, I mean, some of which is just reminding you. A value function, value of a state, okay, is the expected long-term reward from that state. Right? That's what you basically were talking about. And a Q value is an expected long-term reward. A Q value is specified for a state S and an action A. State S and an action A. And in fact, Q values are very popular in reinforcement learning. And I'll tell you in a minute why it makes sense. But all Q value is saying is, so if you have a state S, right, and you can do A1, A2, A3, A4, etc., right? A1 will get you to multiple states, A2 can get you to multiple states, A3 can get you to multiple states. You can consider the expected reward of doing each of these actions, okay? And the value of this state is, of course, if you know the values of all these states, optimal values of those states, then the value of this state is the value that you get by doing the action that gives the maximum expected value. Okay, right? Now, the Q value, on the other hand, is just the value you get by Q is given for a state S and an action A. And all it says is the long-term reward you will get by doing action A in state S. Okay, now clearly the V and Q are related. V of S is max over all A, Q of SA. Okay, the interesting reason in reinforcement learning you talk about Q values is because you may not even know what are all the actions available. All you can talk about is among the actions that I have, what's the best action I can do. Okay, because when you don't have a model, that means you don't even know what are all the actions you can do. Okay, but anyway, so it's worth thinking in terms of, you know, also knowing the word Q values, because sometimes it's useful to think directly in terms of Q values. And max of all the Q values from a state is its value. Okay. Now, given a value function, there is a greedy policy corresponding to that value function. Okay, if I know a value function, there's a greedy policy corresponding to that value function. And all that policy says basically is pick the action that has the highest expected value with respect to the current value function. Okay? And then given a policy, there is a value function. That we talked about that too. And the way you do that is you basically write down these simultaneous equations, set of linear simultaneous equations, which connect value of a state to value of its neighbors when you do the action that you are supposed to do in this state using this policy. Okay? And so you can, computing the value of a policy involves solving basically the set of linear equations. Now, the cute thing, of course, that you remember from the policy iteration is that if you start from a policy, compute the value function corresponding to that, and compute the greedy policy corresponding to that value function, you would change the policy. Do you understand what I'm saying? That was the whole point why policy iteration works. Otherwise, you'll just be in the same policy. Okay? So the greedy policy of a multiple policies might have the same value function. Okay? And so you can go to this value function starting with a policy. And then once you have this value, there is a greedy policy which you can compute. Okay? And that's the one that you commit to. And then you redo this whole thing again. Okay. So anyway, those are the issues. And then optimal value function, of course, is the value of the optimal policy. And then they are connected. Optimal value and optimal policy functions are connected. Okay. So the special cases, this is ugly. The special cases are, one special case is a stochastic shortest path problem, which is very useful for us. And what it is basically a Markov decision process which has no rewards, no rewards whatsoever, only costs. Actions have costs, so there is a cost model. All states have zero rewards. Some states are absorbing, and those are the goal states. So you reach the goal states, you kind of die. You can't get out of them. Okay, and so the interesting thing is, and also you start from an initial state. You are told what initial state you are starting from. So the special case in this, the specialization in this case is we don't have rewards, we only have costs, and we do have absorbing states corresponding to the goal states, and then we know the initial state from which the agent is starting. Okay, so that is an MDP. It's just a special case. Okay. And that particular special case corresponds to actually finding if in fact your actions are deterministic, then this would just be classical planning problem. Agreed? Because in classical planning, you start from an initial state. There are a bunch of states that you can reach that are considered goal states, and you're trying to find a sequence of actions, the shortest sequence of actions are the cheapest cost sequence of actions that will get you to one of the goal states. So this is the one that's closest to classical planning. This does not correspond to oversubscription planning, which also we talked about, where there are lots of goals which have different utilities, etc. That would involve actually modeling rewards. Okay, here all goals are considered equally good. And all that is all that is needed is find the cheapest cost path to a goal. Okay. Now notice that in this case too, there would be values for each of the states, and they better be, it's best to think of them as costs really. Instead of thinking of long term expected rewards. Since reward is gone, then all you have is either negative rewards, or if you want to just think in terms of positives, you can think of cost, you know, the version instead of the value V star, you tend to think of J star, which is the expected cost of each state. Okay. Now so the expected cost of each state, and so the other thing is that of course you can run policy and value iteration on this, okay, compute the optimal policy. That would tell you essentially if you find yourself in any of the states, what's the best action to do. However, since you do have an initial state, you can actually try to solve this problem in a more goal-directed way. So you can essentially start from the initial state and make progress towards one of the goal states. Okay. In particular, if it turns out that the transition function is such that the state space is partitioned, let's say. State space is partitioned. Okay, and the initial state is in one partition, and there are some goals in this partition, and there are these other states which are not, you cannot reach them from the states in this partition. Okay, in that case, it's quite clear that the normal Markov decision process, normal value and policy iteration, will wind up telling you what to do in both the partition you are in and the partition you might get into, but you'll only get into it if in fact the world completely changes. Right? Now, in your case, if you do know the initial state and if you do actually heuristic search, then you could avoid that problem and you can just go directly. You can compute the optimal values only for the reachable states. So a state is considered reachable if there exists some sequence of actions that you can do from the initial state to reach them. Graph plan was telling you deterministic reachability. You want stochastic reachability now. Okay, it's considered reachable if it is reachable with non-zero probability. That's all I need. Okay, all I need is for every reachable state, if I give you the optimal policy, then that's enough. It doesn't matter what happens in the other rest of the state space. So that's how the problem is simpler now, because you know you can actually The issue is that normal value and policy iteration don't realize that, and so they still will work for an entire state space. So that's one reason why we will consider this, and we'll look at heuristic search algorithms, things which look more like heuristic search, but will compute value and policies. And they will wind up computing them only for the reachable state. That's what LAO star is. That's what RTDP is. LRTDP is. Okay. Now, one other interesting thing, I have to skip over this, unfortunately, because I can't, it's foggy. Oh, no, some of these things are coming up, I don't know why. Okay, so here is I told you that instead of writing it in terms of V star, you can do in terms of J star, where J is the cost, and now the Bellman equation looks like this. It's the same as before, except where there was a max, there's a min now. And you're trying to, the J star is the minimal cost. This way you get to think only in terms of positive numbers. You don't need to think about negative numbers. Okay? But basically it's just a variation of the general Bellman equation. Okay? And then the usual one that we talked about last class, that is a separate special case. So the infinite horizon discounted reward case is normally, so this version of MDPs is quite popular in planning community for reasons that you can see, because you can think of this as essentially classical planning kind of goals, except you have stochastic action. Okay. On the other hand, in the reinforcement learning community, the simplest model that they tend to look at essentially is infinite horizon discounted reward model. Okay, and they tend to think in terms of reward models rather than cost models. But part of the reason of talking about these special cases is that once you understand what they're doing, if you want to do the same technique in the stochastic shortest path case, you can do it, because they're all essentially doing the same Markov decision process. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, this is something that you already know previously. I'm sorry. This one is something that you saw last class. It's a max one. And then there is a separate case, which also is kind of cute, which is probabilistic planning, where all I care about is not the expected cost of reaching the goal, but just to increase the probability of reaching the goal. That's it. So normal classical planning is essentially get me a plan that reaches the goal with probability 1.0. Optimal classical planning is get me a plan that reaches the goal with 1.0 probability, of course, and it can't do anything else. In deterministic, either you reach or you don't reach. Okay, and 1.0 probability, and it has the shortest cost. Okay, when you go into the stochastic actions, you can essentially generalize it in two different ways. One is just find me the shortest expected cost plan. Okay? Or a policy which basically gets you a shortest expected cost, or I can get a policy which gives you the maximum probability of reaching the goal. Do the action from each of the states that increases the probability. These are two different things, you understand, right? Because, you know, depending on the cost of the action, you know, in the previous case, there may be one action which is sort of definitely going to take you towards the goal, but it's very costly. So your doctor decides to do the cheaper action because your insurance doesn't pay for it. Okay? Here, money is no objective. All that we want is probability of satisfaction. So you do the very best action possible every level in terms only of the goal reaching probability. Okay, that too is a special case of the general MDP. Okay, here interestingly, the MDP model, the Bellman model, looks slightly different because you essentially are writing it in terms of probabilities, and it winds up being multiplicative. Okay, so basically, you would assume that the probability of reaching the goal is equal to zero. And these things make sense, by the way, in terms of a threshold. Okay, because if you allow infinite horizon, then even the unlikely actions will ultimately reach the goal. Okay, if they have low probability of reaching a goal, they still also will reach the goal. Okay. The interesting thing is, given a threshold, given a horizon T, maximize the probability of reaching the goal within that horizon. Okay. And so this would be sort of a finite horizon MDP. Okay. So it would be a non-stationary policy. And then you would assume that you can say that the probability P star is what you're trying to compute. And then once you compute the P star, then you can compute the actions in terms of P star. So instead of value function or J star, you now think in terms of P star. Okay. So P star is zero at the last stage. P star is zero if you're not already in the goal state. Because if you're not already in the goal state, you'll never get there. Okay. And it would be one for any goal state for all thresholds, because once you are in the goal state, the probability of reaching the goal state is one. Okay, and then of course the other interesting scenario, when you know P star ST is defined in terms of the probabilities of the neighbors reaching the goal and the probability of you reaching the neighbor, which are multiplied. Okay, so the maximizing probability case and minimizing the expected cost case are the two special cases of MDP that we are most interested in from the planning point of view. Okay, at least the models of planning that we talked about. I'm not saying MDP's model is not planning, that's planning too, but the ones that we have talked about till now, you know, from the classical planning all the way to belief space planning, we always had goals and we just had to reach them with the lowest cost. Okay. Now there is this one class that we did look at, which is the oversubscription planning, okay, where goal states have different rewards. If you reach these many, if you get these many goals, you get this much reward. You get these many goals, you get this different reward. Okay, that's the oversubscription planning, right? Now, one interesting thing is the previous models told you that straightforward classical planning, the deterministic classical planning, is just a special case of SSSP model. Agreed? Deterministic classical planning, classical planning is deterministic, but classical planning is just a special case of SSSP, optimal classical planning. Okay, where the oversubscription planning, even in the deterministic case, it too obviously is a special case of MDP. Because you now have both rewards and costs. Okay. In fact, the terminology that I used when I was talking about oversubscription planning was slightly confusing, because I used the utilities of the goals and costs of the actions. Okay. Had I instead talked about rewards for the goals and costs for the actions, then it's just basically direct MDP model. About the only tricky issue is, presumably, if I have a reward of 5 units for G1, right? What that means is in every state where G1 is true, because remember when we were talking about our substitution planning, we were talking about factored representation. And now we are actually talking about explicit states. Okay. So when I said G1 has the following, G1 has reward 5, what I meant is going to any state where G1 is true gets you reward 5. Okay. Now the tricky thing is, of course, that in the normal oversubstitution planning scenario, when you say you are done, that's when I'll come and see how many goals are true in the state where you ended up. Okay. So you cannot say, look, I went through this high reward state earlier, but now by this time I'm no longer in that state. Do you understand what I'm saying? So I went through a state where G1 is true, and then G2 is true, and then G3 is true, and then I stop. At this point, neither of them are true. So from an oversubscription planning point of view, it's a bad plan, because you know, when I check, you need to have the goals ready in the final state. The reason I'm saying this is because MDP, normally, if you just convert this directly into an MDP model, you know, you will get the reward when you pass through the state. The most obvious way you would think of converting this into an MDP model would say goals, you know, any state where G is true, you get the G's reward. Okay, but that, even if you compute the optimal policy for that, it won't have the semantics you want, which is that you will get only the cumulative reward corresponding to the final state that you reached. Okay, the reason I'm bringing this up is because while MDP is a very general model, converting what you want to do into an MDP model can be tricky sometimes, because the most obvious thing I could have done actually was wrong. Because in fact, I can collect the reward multiple times, go around the state having G1 true like 15 times. Every time I go, I get a reward. And remember that I'm not using any discount factor in the SSSP that I'm looking at. I don't use any discount factor. I'm not using any gamma. It's an indefinite horizon problem. Okay, so I can easily collect lots and lots of rewards by going through the state. And in fact, I won't even be in the goal, in the final state I reach, goal may not even be true. That's clearly not the intent of at least oversubscription planning model that we talked about, right? So now what else can I do? Here is another idea. So the really wrong idea is, the most obvious thing would be wrong. Here is a slightly better idea, which is make any state where any goal, any subset of goals hold to be a sink state, so that you will never get out of it once you get in. That looks reasonable, because remember when we talked about oversubscription planning, we did talk about the fact that ultimately, you know, if you have n goals, then you know, you first have to figure out which subset of n goals are the optimal goals to focus on, and then figure out the plan for that. But in some sense, they are kind of well connected. You know, the what is the right subset to pick depends upon what's the plan to support them. Okay, we just artificially separated them. Okay, so one idea would be to just say make every state with every subset of goals be a sink state. That would be solving one problem, which is that you will not any longer get repeated rewards for the same goal. But it introduces a different problem. What is it? If by mistake you ever reach any partial goal state, you're stuck there. I'm not done yet. You know, I just reached G1, G2, but from the same, while keeping G1, G2 true, I also want to make G3 possible. But I'm dead already because I reached a goal state. Okay? So what can you do? What you can do is, you can essentially write a MDP in a slightly different way. Here is one idea that I'm giving. The reason I'm saying this is, this gives you ideas of how you can convert your own problem into an MDP problem, your own problem with some complex reward function into an MDP problem. This is just one example, case study, okay? So here, the idea, one idea that would work is add an extra state variable called done deal, okay? and add an extra action called done. Basically, what I want to do is I want the agents to explicitly say, okay, now I am ready to be evaluated. When it says it, that's when I should come and check how many goals are true in the final state. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's like I shouldn't stop you in the middle of the exam. You should not be allowed to get, you know, credit for, you know, the same problem multiple times during the exam. And neither can I just stop you after two problems are over and say I'm going to grade you right now. So I let you tell me when you want to stop. And then at that point I will come and grade you. Okay? To do this, the agent can decide when it wants to do the done action, and then it will do a state variable done deal. Okay? Now, once done deal is true in any state, it's a sync state. So my transition function now would be essentially in any state where done deal is true, you can't go any forward after that. Okay? Just a second. Now it turns out, think about this, that will take care of your problem. Now it's just a normal MDP. Okay? Now how much, what did I do? I just doubled the state space size. I doubled it. Adding one state variable is to double the state space size. Okay? Which isn't happy news. Okay? So in fact, this is something that I actually mentioned when I was talking about oversubscription planning long back, that several weeks back, and I said, well, in fact, oversubscription planning can be done by converting it to MDP and solving it. And I said, no, we tried it and it didn't scale. And what I meant was we tried it this way, and we used one of the algorithms that I might explain, probably not today, but actually on Wednesday, called SPUD algorithm, which is at the time when we tried one of the better factored approaches for solving fully observable Markov-Deschamps processes. Okay, and it would give me the optimal policy. Okay, the problem was it would just not scale for us. Okay, and so we wound up taking these other heuristic methods that I told you about, which is first pick the objectives and then do the search on them. Even in the deterministic case, you could have used this even in the deterministic case. Okay? Yes, sir.
Sync is just a decluttering problem.
What?
The goal is unestablished. It's just saying you can't unestablish it. Why can't you just use the standard decluttering methodology?
Yes. So tell me why not. See, the one thing that I have an issue with this course, of course, is assessment is in your heads. I'm not assessing you too much, or even at all, and so I never really know how much is actually getting through, but this is a very good question. Why can't I use declobbering methodologies, whatever they are? When did you hear about declobbering methodologies? And they were searching in the space of what?
Plan
space. What are we doing search here in the space of? State space. So, if you do this, you need to provide plan space approaches for Markov-Deschamps processes. There are approaches which try to compute. Yes, you do this, and I'll give you the spelling of my last name. All you need to do is put my name. You know, we'll both be famous. All I'm saying is, it's a great problem, which is trying to directly do policy search, okay, without touching the state. That is, in fact, there is an idea called policy gradient search, which is sort of like searching in the space of, doing a local search in the space of plans, which if I can get myself to explain it to you, I will explain it. But in general, one of the things is, in some ways we have become much more expressive. In some ways we have gone down, okay? In terms of modeling of the problem, we have become more expressive. We don't need to have goals now. We can have general reward functions. We don't need to have deterministic actions. We can have stochastic actions. Okay? But on the other hand, in terms of search, in fact, we're talking about explicit states. We are not even talking about factored representation. and you have to first talk about factory representations and talk about policies in those factory representations and directly searching in the space of them. It's a great idea, great direction. I just don't know how to do it yet, and I don't think anybody does yet. Okay, so it's a good insight to actually, these kinds of questions are worth asking, because in fact, you know, since we have talked about partial order planning for, you know, classical planning, where is one for this? There isn't, really. Okay. In fact, the closest is policy, anything which is in the policy space, like policy evaluation, is sort of like that. Except it's not, you know, it's worth, in fact, trying to, you know, write down, on, maybe on the blog, you know, how does policy iteration correspond to partial order planning? Policy iteration is the plan, right? The policy is the plan. Okay. One of the interesting issues is the policies themselves should be representable as compactly as possible. Currently, in the explicit representation of states which we are looking at, policies of the same size as the size of the state space. I want, one of the nicest things that I had in the partial order plans is I could have very simple, very easy to express plans. Okay, so in fact, I could have the following policy. Whenever the light is red, stop. Otherwise, go. That's my policy. This is going to be, I mean, in all possible road states, this policy tells me what action to do. Okay, the extensional representation of this policy would be at the same size as the size of the state space. This intentional representation, this implicit representation, which says, when the light is red, stop, otherwise go, is a much simpler description. That's the beauty of doing factored representation, and we take it for granted coming to MDPs from classical planning. But MDP people, not MDP people, I mean, the problem doesn't lend itself as easily to factored approaches. So there is work going on, and we will talk about some of them. But in fact, to get you an idea, last time I taught this course 4 years back, the last class of that semester is already over last time. I mean, so this from here onwards, starting today's class, it's all bonus. I did not teach any of this stuff in the last time I taught. Okay, some of this stuff was available, but I wasn't even feeling as comfortable as I am now. And right now is not all particularly comfortable. Okay, because I think I'm at the edge of my understanding. There are people who understand it better than me. That's good. So that's why there is stuff available. But in general, it's as we are coming here, we are talking about moving horizon. Okay, but it's a good point that you could do, what you're doing essentially is protections, and doing protections in the space of states is an interesting issue. Okay, but here is a way I ensure the protection. Okay. Okay. So that's basically a different kind of an MDP. This is an MDP where you do have a reward value, reward function, as well as a cost function. So it's not this stochastic shortest path because it only has cost and it minimizes it. It's not this one which is just only reward and maximizes it. It truly is the general MDP. Is it infinite horizon or finite horizon or infinite indefinite horizon? This model that I talked about here. Over subscription planning would be infinite horizon, finite horizon, indefinite horizon. Indefinite horizon. Okay, and again you are looking for proper policies which will end into one of these states where done is true. Okay, and you know, so that's still, this is a general, it's a special case of the general MDP, but it's a little more general than the SSSP, which is even more special than this. Okay. Okay, what I'm going to do, I think I went much slower than I expected, but it's hopefully okay. What we'll do starting now is to talk about two things, basically efficient algorithms for solving these special cases. In particular, unless I tell you otherwise, assume that I'm actually focusing on just SSSP, which is stochastic shortest path algorithm. Okay, so you're minimizing expected cost. That's the basic idea. Okay, many of these, and then very importantly, both oversubscription version as well as the stochastic shortest path version have an initial state given to them. The agent knows the state they're starting from. So you would like to actually use that information. Okay. So given that special case, the efficient algorithms come in two different ways. One, of course, is to use factored representations directly, which we will talk about at some point of time. And in fact, if you read the second part of the Boutillier paper, it's all about factored representation. So for example, the transition function can be represented in terms of probabilistic strips operators. Okay? And the reward function can be represented as some sort of a decision tree. And the value function can also be represented as some sort of a decision tree. And then Bellman update now has to be done in terms of these structures. Okay? And what's more interesting, in fact, you can also do, since we talked about BDDs, you can also think of doing updates for a whole number of states at the same time. But that's what BDDs did, right? Which is, you know, did their regression for a whole state, set of states, and progression for a whole set of states. And in fact, you can think of the Bellman update essentially as a regression step. That was the big point that this guy makes in the paper. Okay? And so the only difference is these states will have different numerical values. The value function is a real value function. Okay? BDDs are in terms of ones and zeros. If you have sets of states, BDDs are a good choice to represent them. We talked about it. And BDDs think in terms of ones and zeros. And there are these ideas called, the extension of BDDs called ADDs, algebraic decision diagrams, where essentially the leaf nodes, instead of being ones and zeros, would be a real number. Okay? And then you essentially are doing, just as in the belief state space, you did all the operations in terms of operations on BDDs directly. Projection was an operation on BDDs. There's a BDD corresponding to the state set, and there's a BDD corresponding to the projection operator, and there's a BDD operation that combines them to give you a new BDD corresponding to the new set of states. You could do this for Bellman update, okay, and it would be, the original state would be a distribution. Basically, the value function, the original value function is, after Bellman update, becomes a new value function. Okay, and the value functions are represented as ADDs. So that's one idea, one kind of an idea for factored representations. We'll talk more about them later. Okay. One other thing that you can talk about even before going to factored representations is to just try at least to connect value and policy iteration ideas, okay, to heuristic search. Okay. Especially if you know the initial state, then you should at least try to avoid evaluating all possible states of the world. Only look at the states that are actually reachable. Okay? And if you have a good heuristic, you can even look at a smaller subset of them. Okay? That's essentially what LAO star and RTTP do. I will try to introduce them today and we'll continue the discussion next class. And then there is another class of models for efficient algorithms, in, you know, even before going to factored, which is you can either do execution in the real world, which is reinforcement learning, or do simulation, which is Monte Carlo approach. Those are also, so basically, just as you can compute Bayes network posterior probabilities by, you know, sampling methods, I can do that for MDPs too. Okay, we will talk about that, particularly because, in fact, the best approaches for probabilistic planning in the current probabilistic planning competition turn out to be these sampling methods. Okay, and so maybe we'll tell you about the most recent paper that we just got in, that based on Sangwook's work, which essentially talks about considering multiple samples of the future, computing deterministic plans for all of those futures and using those deterministic plans to figure out what's the best action to do in the current state. So that way you get to use all you know about deterministic planning. Once you know how for each action which says I can, with 1.1 probability these things happen, 0.7 probability these things happen, 0.2 probability these things happen, if the action says that, then you can essentially consider different futures in which one of them actually happens. Okay, for every future you actually have one particular determinization of the action. And once I have the deterministic actions, I can compute the deterministic plan. and use these samples, the sampled futures, to compute what's the best policy. Okay, so we'll talk about that. No, at this rate, actually, Tuesday after next Tuesday, because I'm going slow. Okay, that's basically the deal. And then, of course, in between, you will do actual execution, which is reinforcement learning. Okay, but in actual execution, once you're doing actual execution, essentially, you don't really need to have even the model, because you're executing the world anyway. Okay, but I also told you that you can take any reinforcement learning algorithm and simulate the execution in your mind if you have the model. That is another way of solving MDP. Okay, and whenever I say solve MDP, find the optimal policy. That's the basic idea. Okay, so this is the major point between heuristic search versus dynamic programming. Okay. Basically, heuristic search is the A star search that we already, A star and AO star sorts of searches. We start from a state and try to reach some goal state. Okay. The stuff that we did in policy and value iteration are basically called dynamic programming. And the idea is the optimal solution for a stage depends on the optimal solution for the previous stage. Okay, that's the optimal substructure principle, right? If you compare them in terms of just algorithms, value and policy iterations approaches use dynamic programming update. This is Bellman update, which looks at all the neighbors and tries to set its value. Okay, and then of course the value, if you do it as update, then the value would actually converge. And then so you set the value of a state in terms of the maximum expected value achievable by doing actions from that state, and which will then take you to the neighbors whose values you hope you know. Okay, either you can solve them simultaneously or you can just, you know, do this as an update. Okay, now one big point, of course, is they do the update for every state in the state space. Okay, one of the things that you want to do is somehow, we talked about asynchronous value iteration, which are prioritized sweeping, where you only consider, you don't have to do them synchronous fashion. And you can also talk about ordering states. Okay, those are possible, but in general, these essentially do work for all the states. When you say you have a value function, you know the value function for all the state spaces. Okay. On the other hand, heuristic search approaches explore only the part of the space that's actually reachable from the initial state. Okay, and then even within the reachable space, if you have a good heuristic, you can reduce, you can declare success in terms of saying, here is an optimal path, I'm sure of it, even though you haven't expanded many reachable states. That's the whole point. So in fact, reachable state itself is better than value and policy iteration, but even that is not enough. In fact, if you have a good heuristic, what you're trying to do is cut down search so that it will become just a fraction of the reachable space. The better the heuristic, the smaller the fraction. And given if you have the guarantee about the quality of the, if you have a guarantee about the quality of the heuristic in terms of, for example, it being an admissible heuristic, which means it's less than, A star search is done in cost model, right? And if it is less than the true cost to the goal, which is what you're trying to find for every node, then if you use that heuristic to do prioritized queue in A star search, you are guaranteed to find optimal. Okay, so why can't I do these guys this way? You know, especially since I do have the initial state, right? I can go forward from the initial state. One question is one interesting question to see is, even from the A star search, what is the heuristic telling you? One interesting thing about A star search is the following. You may wind up expanding only a fraction of the reachable space, right? You may wind up only exploring the fraction of the reachable space, but you need to know before you started. You cannot ask people, just give me heuristics for 15 of the states. You need the heuristic function for all the states. Okay? So what is heuristic? Heuristic actually is a lower bound on the optimal expected cost. So A star search does need value function. It just, if you have a bound on the value function or bound on the cost function, then it can use that to get to the optimal policy faster. That's the basic idea. Okay, so that's a very big point to remember, that an admissible heuristic is nothing but the lower bound on the cost to reach the goal from any given state. So in the deterministic case, right, admissible heuristic is just a lower bound on the J star, where J star is the expected cost from any state to the goal state. If it's deterministic, expectation goes away because you're taking min over the action. Okay, so now if I actually have stochastic case, I can still get lower bounds, right? All I need to basically consider is shortest deterministic path. So if I was looking, remember that grid problem I was looking at in last class, okay? If I consider the shortest deterministic path from any node to the goal node and take the cost of that path and put that as the original value for each of the states, I tell you, that's a guaranteed lower bound on the eventual J star value. Okay? So you can use deterministic planning to compute admissible heuristics for the stochastic version. Okay? So those are the kind of connections, and I'll just show you this and stop today really. That you have, if you have normal A star search, is just a looking for a path in the space of states. We considered, when we came to belief space search, especially with sensing actions, we talked about the fact that you are doing search in AO star, I mean AND OR graph. And to essentially do this reachability analysis, so start from the goal initial state and keep going towards absorbing states. Remember, in the SSSP, you won't consider a path to be happy unless it ends in an absorbing state. Right? So the question then is, you know, in the AO star, essentially, all the leaf nodes have to be absorbing, which is not a problem. The problem turns out to be that you can also have cycles. You can also have cycles within the space, because doing an action from this state might take me back to the previous state. And the optimal solution might be a cyclic subgraph of the original AND OR cyclic graph. In AO star search, optimal solution, normal AO star search, optimal solution is an acyclic AND graph of an AND OR graph. Here, I could have a cyclic AND graph, because each action really is a hyperedge, which can take me when you do this action, in this case, for example, when I do this action from here, I can either come here or I can go back there. Yes?
So how can it be that a cycle can be optimal? How far that is?
No, so this is why you need to read the LAO star point, which is that all you are saying is that this is basically like, when was the last time you could have, so the closest it comes to, by the way, is Bellman-Ford versus Dijkstra. Okay, that's one, if you're looking for intuitions, this is not somehow enough, and if it's LAO star algorithm is not enough, then you can essentially see from there. Okay, and one of the points that he makes in the LAO star paper, that you go back and look at it more carefully, is you wind up doing the value iteration to essentially back up the values. Okay? And then expansion is done using heuristic, and then just to figure out what the current values are, you would have to do a value iteration, which is what you're doing, you know, in A star and AND OR graph turns out to be just a special case of value iteration anyway. So the big insight in that paper is that you are always doing special cases of value iteration, you just do it fully and then you can get this. Okay, we'll come back to that as well as RTDP next when I come back on Thursday. And on Tuesday you will hear more about fun stuff like Q learning, temporal difference learning, etc., which are all about how to compute the model, or at least how to learn to act in reinforcement learning kind of scenarios.